Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Weatherspoon. We are going to have a wonderful conversation today with four people that I've met just recently, or at least the last year and a half, I'd say, or 2 years. And this is a podcast which will be, I think, the second in what we'll probably do a three-part series. The podcast that this is most related to is the one we did about a month ago, which was the story of three parents talking about how their children came to them. These were three faithful, what you might call really stalwart, still believing, actively attending in church parents whose sons, in the case of that podcast, had all, as young adults, come to them and said, "My faith journey is more complicated than it used to be. I just want to disclose to you where I'm at." And they kind of told the stories of how that happened. What we have here tonight is four parents. We have two women and two men at various stages of their own spiritual journey, having reached that point of, "I feel like I need to now tell my children, especially my faithful, more believing children, I need to kind of come out to them and tell them where I'm at on my journey, which is now a little bit more complicated than maybe when I was raising you earlier." So they're either at some stage about to have that conversation, or they've lived their lives in such a way that it sort of has been known all along that they were perhaps what you might call a Leah Lahona Latter-day Saint, or somebody who wasn't exactly what you'd call Peter Priesthood or Molly Mormon, or they've had the experience of having the conversation with their kids in the last few years, and we're going to talk about how they talked about these things, what happened when they did, results, would they do it the same way again, and we're just going to kind of wrestle and share stories and adventures in spiritual journeys, especially when it comes to relating to our children about our own faith journeys. So that's what we're going to do tonight, and rather than have everybody introduce themselves and then just quickly go into stories, we just thought we'd go right into people's stories, at least of their own faith journey, up to the point where they are getting to that point where they want to share more with their children, or they have said that. And so our four people today are Carrie, Jeff, Gail, and Kevin. And Carrie, we've asked you to go first and just tell us a little bit about your journey.
Thank you. I'm a fifth generation LDS person. I'm the mother of seven, and I was a true believing Mormon until we moved to Utah with our children in 1986. At that point, I joined a book club, and one of my friends gave me a copy of In Sacred Loneliness, which raised a lot of questions for me, and I was just totally unaware of the things that were in that book. However, I did shelf all of my concerns, and it took about 25 years of continued reading. I read Brody, Palmer, Krakauer, Prince, Quinn, Bushman, went to Sunstone, until I had so many things shelved that I had a pantry full of doubts. During those 25 years, I was in the throes of raising my family and trying to make ends meet and going back to graduate school and getting a career. And my focus just was not on, you know, looking into the church and its issues. But after the kids left, that's when I hit the wall. And what it really came down to was the difference between spirit and emotion. That was the issue that was just so confusing to me They both seemed alike, and I knew that I couldn't trust my emotions because emotions are caused by thoughts. And so you can change your thoughts, and that changes your emotions. And so at that point, I decided that the only thing I really had to go on was logic. And that was the most reliable source that I had. And so I completely shut off my emotions about the church and looked into it with logic. That's about when I hit the point where I thought maybe I should start telling my children what was going on with me and my testimony.
But so far you haven't told them at all?
Well, I have three unbelieving children. So, of course, I felt more comfortable to share what was going on with me and the things that I was reading with them. So they were very supportive, and yeah, I did share it with them, but I didn't share it with my husband or my other four children until just recently. In fact, well, we'll get to that later, okay?
Yeah. Listeners, we've kind of planned in a second round, which will be the story of actually interacting with our children, with our spouses, and things like that. This first part was more of a spiritual journey. So, Carrie, if I'm catching it on with you, so 1986, so 25 years, I wanted to quickly mention, for those who might not know, In Sacred Loneliness is the book by Todd Compton, and it's about Joseph Smith's plural wives, where he sort of does the whatever biographical information he could come up with on, was it 30 or 33 plural wives of Joseph Smith, just for those who didn't know that title. So that's the one that kind of got you started. And so, Harry, how have you been, like, has church been torture these entire 25 years? Tell us a little bit more. I'd like to get a flavor of, what have you been unhappy at church, or is it just kind of comes and goes, and now it's reached a point when you got to this spirit versus emotions, and so turning to logic part?
Well, looking back on it, I thought I was happy then, just as happy as when I didn't know anything, and I had some important callings, and I served my callings, very well, and I just raised my children as if I were still a true believing Mormon. So I think I was happy enough, but looking back on it, man, it's miserable to get seven kids ready for church in the morning, and it's so stressful to try to keep them reverent for 3 hours, and boy, that's misery for a mom, don't you think, Gail?
Yeah.
Well, so it wasn't really the church that was making me miserable, because you know what? I couldn't hear anything. I was out in the foyer. I couldn't listen to what they were saying to have any issue with it.
So even now, and then now, even though you're on this journey of taking, you're just not trusting your emotions, you not really ever having had that separation of emotion from spirit, now that you're in logic, how many years have you been in that portion of it? And is that what's making it come to this sort of head that we're sensing that you're right at?
Yeah, it's only been a couple of years. Maybe the last 2 years.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you for that, and feel free to jump in as we talk with others, and that's, of course, good for everybody. But thanks. We'll catch on to some more things for you in a second round, but thank you, Carrie. Uh-huh. We're going to turn to Jeff next. Jeff, would you tell us about your life and adventures in spirit and family?
Glad to. I've always loved being a Mormon, and I still love being a Mormon. Both the idea of it and kind of how it works for me. That's probably the most powerful theme over all of this, is that it works for me. I loved having something unique about me and something to say about the world and what's going on. Having my people and my place was all good stuff for me. I didn't find it unusual or alarming to have so many things that didn't add up doctrinally or story-wise from a young age. Or maybe I just didn't notice like how many there were, because I thought there were so many things that did add up. Really black and white, nice and tight, answered everything. From a young age, I've enjoyed many spiritual experiences. So, I created a box called It Will Be Made Clear Later and began putting
I like it.
Things in the box. So it's hard to pinpoint when it got too full. When thinking back, it was well after a fully active adolescence, an honorable but average mission. I slog through like a post-mission undiagnosed depression. I finished my degree, got married to a really awesome person, and started having babies and trying to make a living, all that. So really when it hit me, I've been saying for a while, it's like the opposite of C.S. Lewis, that I was surprised by doubt. Mm. I was the last person, really, yeah. that I thought. So I'm trying to trace the beginnings of this change. I told my kids over the years that, my study of the history with God and his people, that eventually he's going to test your faith. I put it flippant, you know, like, hey, kids, look at all the crazy, unexplainable stuff God has asked his people to do. Why do you think you're safe? You know, why is he going to let us off the hook? There's going to be something that will make us stand on our own testimony sooner or later. I don't have like I'm not a journal keeper, but I was craving something defining, I think. Anyways, I did most of my journey alone. It started in the late 90s. I'd been raised expecting something big, like a walk back to Missouri to build temples, or I don't know. So my seminary teacher had my boots were by the door. We're ready to go any second. And so I don't know if my faith crisis was first precipitated by this decided lack of big moments. Mormons seem to be more accepted. The general authorities had stopped talking apocalyptically. I'm no historian. Maybe they never had, and it was just my seminary teacher. Difficult but clear positions. Things that seemed like really hard and fast were changing without like a chapter in the Doctrine and Covenants. And I was looking for Thus Saith the Lord, if I think back clearly. So I was craving maybe even something that would make less sense, not more, that would demand faith and not intellectual effort, like demanding an action. So I got it. The big moment, the thing that I thought everyone would eventually have to face, the thing that you could not do, the place I couldn't go, and that was Prop 22 out in California.
Okay.
And along with Prop 8, despite all of the, I want to be respectful of where everybody's at, but it was intended to keep gay couples from legally marrying. I don't want to get into that specifically, but for our purposes, I had a real problem, right? It was the first time I'd been asked to do something and I did not do it. What do you do when your conscience, your light of Christ, conflicts with the instructions from the church? So that began like a 7 or 8 year wrestle with myself and God, trying to define who I was and what I believed if I couldn't obey. And everything came back flying out of the box at that point, right? So just I was plugged into nothing. No dialogue, no Sunstone, no book groups, I wasn't plugged into anyone. And I kept it very private. 2007, I think, I had come to the end of searching on my own. I opened up to my wife. This whole time, I'd been the same old uber active person while I was having this internal struggle. And I couldn't keep it private anymore. For my own integrity, I needed what I called a timeout. The temple and the priesthood and the church and my people are very sacred to me, and I was an imposter. I can still get sick to my stomach remembering the fear of getting a call from someone who trusted me to give them a blessing. And like, what if my duplicity like caused them harm? Anyways, so that year sucked. I mean, geez, me and my wife joke about having been married for 25 years, 17 of the best years of our life. Because <Yeah. laughs> some of those years were horrible. And this was one. It followed a common pattern. She was, from listening to some of the podcasts and people's experiences, right? She was mad as hell because I betrayed a promise that we had never discussed. She came from a semi-active family and she wanted someone she would never have to worry about in the church sense. And who better than, the son of a stake president from a prominent family and all the indications that I was a rock. Thanks for her love and patience. But I was talking to her about this. She said, due to her complete awesomeness,
I love it.
Her willingness to love me as I am, she gave me the time and space to take my time out. She likes to tell anyone who listen that I'm her ticket into heaven. Not like the you know, you got to have a Mormon guy to get incense, but in the, like, I'm her one great act of charity. And
got it. Above and beyond service.
Yes. Yeah. Something. Yeah. Beyond. That was her big moment to take me in. So I want to say that my timeout request was pretty mild, and she said that this helped. I stopped going to the temple. I stopped exercising my priesthood. I still felt comfortable with all of the baptismal promises that I made, so I kept taking the sacrament. I started taking only what were actually really awesome jobs in the church where you didn't have to declare truth, and I just kept quiet. So now we're to the point where I knew I needed to figure out something different, and I needed to remove the bad feeling I got from pretending to believe at the same previous level and enjoying all those privileges. I had lost my, I guess the way I'd say it is, I had, the only definitive thing that happened is I lost my belief in knowing. I hadn't come to any new conclusions. I had built my all-in church effort on knowing, and I needed time to construct a life based on not knowing. And that brings us to what do we do about the kids?
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was very clear and wonderful, and loved it. Just everybody, Prop 22 was the ballot initiative in the year 2000, so 8 years before Prop 8. So, but yeah, terrific. Okay, Jeff, thank you so much. We'll come back to you and hear the next part, and we're going to move on to Gail. Gail, would you share?
Okay. Well, I'm the mother of 11 children, and my spiritual journey began back as a young person when I was about 9. I was baptized into the First Christian Church, Disciples of Christ. And then we didn't go in very much as children or in young adult years. So then I was looking for something else as a teenager, and I had neighbors who were Mormon. And I went to seminary with them, and eventually was baptized at 16. Then I believed and adopted everything I was told. I had received my patriarchal blessing somewhere around age of 17 or something like that. And it told me all kinds of things. So through my story here, there's a lot of the patriarchal blessing being scripture, basically, even though that may be not what people look at it as. But I also read the scriptures, and in my patriarchal blessing, it told me to read the prophets, both ancient and modern, and to obey them. Well, anybody who's read the prophets, both ancient and modern, can't possibly live all of that. You know that by now, but I didn't know that when I started. So, over time, I served a mission. I returned from my mission. I got married, and my patriarchal blessing again said I needed to marry someone in the temple who was a priesthood bearer worthy to take me there. So I did. My family was not allowed to be present, and I was told that I was not to have a ring ceremony, as that would be a mockery of the sacred sealing ordinance. I did not have a ring ceremony.
Was that pretty typical back then? Because I know now it seems like it's more of a option that gets talked about. But probably back then, I can't even remember anybody even trying for that. Did you ask?
I did. And I was just told that was not okay. And I don't know who told me. I don't remember. Yeah. But it was like that was a big, bad no-no. But I have friends my same age who really blasted me when I said that was a real problem for me. They said, oh, well, we just did that. And I think, you know, I think that a person who has maybe has a more respect for their parents or something, would have occurred to my brain to not do that. But it didn't occur to my brain not to do that, because I had bought the whole, you know, the whole story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matthew 10:34 and 35 says, think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came to send peace. I did not come to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. I mean, I had been like indoctrinated somewhere by reading the scriptures, basically. I mean, I read the scriptures. I can't say that someone outside of me told me this stuff, but my interpretation of what I read was that I was doing the right thing. I was doing what was right.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any respect for my parents. My mother didn't show up at all, not for the reception, not for anything. She did send me a card that said, you know, have a nice marriage, whatever. That was it. She was very hurt by that. My dad showed up for the reception in another state because I got married in Utah, and my family was from California and Oregon. My dad lived in California, my mom in Oregon. Anyway, so I was a very, very literal believer. And I'd been informed by a Relief Society pamphlet that I'd gotten somewhere in which Joseph Smith said something like, this is a quote, but there's other, seemed to me he had said something else too, but he said, you're now placed in a situation where you can act according to those sympathies which God has planted in your bosoms. If you live up to these principles, how great and glorious. And then, of course, my patriarchal blessing had told me I would have many children, and I just somehow got the impression or understood that I was going to be a nurturer, that I understood Joseph Smith said, well, when I was 16, before I ever joined the church, I was never getting married and I was never having kids. I don't even like kids.
Oh, man. So,
anyway, so for obedience sake to this belief that if I lived righteously or did everything I was supposed to do in the realm of doing, then I would live forever with my family and, you know, become a god and blah, 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 all that stuff. Well, anyway, I understood that I was to create bodies for many spirits, as many as he would send down to me, actually, and that I would have a natural instinct to love and nurture them. And I became a fundamentalist in many aspects because of my reading and strictness. And I guess my personality, I'm a black and white person. I'm an on again, off again. I'm either hot or I'm cold. I just don't have, there's not an in-between in my personality. So I was very strict. And life was work. It wasn't fun. I was doing what was right, not living life. I bore 9 children before I had a breakdown. Nothing anyone could have told me could take the scriptural admonitions away, nor the things I had read that the prophets had said. You couldn't talk me out of what was already read, what I'd already read, what was already said. No matter how much they'd say, well, they don't mean that. They don't mean that. No, you're a little fanatical or whatever. And I'm like, well, it says so. You know. Anyway, my patriarchal blessing had told me that I was supposed to read the scriptures of modern and ancient prophets and be obedient. And along with that, I'd be exalted. So while we know that wasn't possible, I read them, and one of the things that affected my life to this day is that I read modern prophets, although they were not the ones that are alive today or in my lifetime, but modern prophets nonetheless were, I read things about preventing childbirth and that that was an abomination unto God and that we wouldn't be exalted if we curtailed that, and we'd be unhappy and we'd reap disappointment by and by. I mean, I have pages of quotes about that, about not curtailing the children that you have. Yet my personality should never even had one, yet I have 11. I was not happy. I was most certainly not sympathetic. At that, so that, about this time in this process, I have 9 children, and I hear about, from a friend, the Landmark Forum. I don't know if anybody's heard of that, but
yes.
It's a 3 days and an evening conversation. And I went to that, and in there, I looked at myself. I asked myself questions, and I answered myself questions in my own head. And I realized that I didn't believe or know that the church was true, but that all this time, it was just hope. And that over those years of all this stuff, I would be angry all the time about this principle or that principle or this thing in the scriptures that didn't make sense and that contradiction. And I was constantly angry, constantly mad that it wasn't going well, you know, that or that the rest of the church was doing something else other than what was written in the scripture. So I was judgmental as well, very fundamentalist and literal in everything. And I argued with my husband all the time because I kind of, he looks at it as he was the proxy for the church. Because I'd argue with him as if he was the church, or if he believed what, as if he believed what I understood the church to teach. And he was just looking at me like I'm crazy. I mean, he never really did say you're crazy, but it was bad. So anyway, when I finally realized that I didn't know, that I didn't have a testimony, basically. So then I bought some scriptures. I bought my own, a brand new quad. I started studying with intent to gain a testimony from the heart. Because, you know, they always say, well, if you don't have, it's because I'm looking for the wrong stuff. I've been told that by people even now, that it's because all I do is look for the wrong stuff. And I'm like, oh, you have, you know, people making that kind of assertion have no idea what I've already studied and what my intentions have been and my prayers and whatever. So I studied, I prayed, I did everything that I knew how to do with the most positive intent to gain a testimony. Because I thought, well, that's what's making me crazy. If I had a testimony, I wouldn't be so unhappy about doing all this stuff. Well, it never happened. And so I was finally honest with myself and my husband that I simply didn't believe all the stuff taught in the scriptures. I did not believe that there was an anthropomorphic God. I did not believe that the Book of Mormon was true. I did not believe that Joseph Smith was any more than a prophet than myself, my dad, my father-in-law, or any other person. I certainly did not believe the things that the prophets had said, because I'd read those. And I was like, and anyway, my life was proof to me that they weren't true. And I was not, but I was not ready yet to tell my kids, because I had also bought into the idea that my children would do awful things. You know, they might do drugs or be dishonest or hurt people or have no morals or something like that if I didn't raise them in the church. So I continued to be active and not telling them anything. My husband knew, but I didn't tell my kids much.
And then what led you to have two more children?
Well, the 10th one was because I was going to leave my husband. After I had 9 children, I had that breakdown. I was ready to pretend I was not a mother. I was just going to leave, start a new life, pretend I'd never had children, and just vanish, right? That was what I was thinking. But I was a little cuckoo, and I was not capable of doing that. I was non-functional. I couldn't have possibly done it, but I was sure thinking those things. So eventually I left and went to my mother-in-law's, and she took care of me for like 5 weeks. Then I came back home. And I still, at that point, did not believe in abortion, did not believe in preventing childbirth or anything like that. So I was on some kind of natural family planning program to not get pregnant. And, of course, that's, in my world, that's the dumbest thing you can possibly do, is tell me not to have sex when I want to. So then I got pregnant with my 10th child. So that's what happened there. Got pregnant with a 10th. The 11th child was by choice. After I'd given it all up, after I'd come out to my husband, after I'd come out to myself, that I didn't believe all that stuff, I thought, my goodness, I have 10 children. Why not 12? I mean, we may as well go for the dozen at that point. And I was a lot less stressed because I'd given up on any kind of, after the night, after my breakdown, I'd given up on any intention of being righteous or making my children obey or teaching and training them before they're age 8 so that the sin is not upon my head, or, you know, whatever I was living under, what kind of pressure. It was all gone. So I got pregnant with my 11th child, and that one was intentional. And then I determined that was it. I was done. I was never doing it again.
And so this last child, this is how many years ago from now?
He's almost 11.
Okay. All right, so you've really had pretty much made these, you had the landmark for him and sort of the questions, so 15 or so years, and then, if I'm remembering right, you still waited another 7 or 8 years before you had said anything to your children?
I waited 9 years from the time that I did the landmark for him, and I actually got clear as to what was so for me and what was about my, you know, I really wasn't sure after the 9th when I had the breakdown. When I came out of that, I wasn't sure of anything other than I needed to remain alive and to make sure my kids had food and clothes. That was it. I mean, I was on bare survival. Then I did the Lambert form and I came out like, oh, there's a life out there. You know, I can live a real life. But it was 9 years after that when I kept a current temple recommend all that time by going in and just saying whatever there was to say. And then I got more... No, my integrity felt so out that
right.
The last couple times when they changed it for years, then I was like, well, I'd figure it out ahead of time so that I could feel like I was saying what was, that I wasn't lying. I felt like I wasn't lying, so I'd go in and I'd answer the question as best I could without lying. Well, then the 4 years ago, I went in for a temple recommend interview, and I was, you know, I'd spent 2 days trying to run this thing around and around and around, and it just wasn't happening. I was like, okay, I'm losing it. What should I do? And my husband just says, well, tell the truth. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if I tell the truth, you have no idea what's going to happen. And he thought nothing would happen. Well, he didn't know what my truth was, apparently, even though I told him millions of times. Anyway, so I went in for this temple recommend interview, and I asked him to ask me the behavior questions first. So they asked me all the behavior questions, and I was fine on those. And then they got to the first faith in and testimony of question about God, the Father, the Son, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Ghost. And I was like, no. Well, then they wanted to talk a little bit longer and find out what I wanted. You know, do you want to believe? And you know, can you do the things that, as a missionary, you tell people to do, read, pray, and all that? And I was like, I've done all that. I'm done. No. No, thank you. You know, and the only reason I want this temple recommend is so that my children don't have to find out. And you realize, if you don't give me a temple recommend, that's what's going to happen. Sure enough, he said, I can't. The Lord says I can't give you a temple recommend. I was like, okay, fine. So that was in November. And Christmas was coming, and we were going to have all the kids home except for the one on his mission. So we had 10 children at our house, and I wanted to tell them at that point all together. That would have been my style. That's what I would have done if it was up to just me. But I tried to listen to reason, and I talked to people on NOM, New Order Mormon, and they all said, oh, don't do that on Christmas. Don't do that. That's terrible, blah, blah, blah. You know, the kids will remember it bad. They'll have a bad taste in their mouth, and they'll be upset. Every Christmas after that will be bad. And I'm like, oh, brother. Okay, fine. So I didn't tell them.
And we'll catch up to when we go to the second time around, we'll actually hear the story. Was there anything more in the leading up to telling your children that you wanted to share at this time?
No, except for my, you said leading up to it, what actually forced it was that my daughter got a blessing from my husband that Christmas while they were all here. And in the blessing, he says, oh, you need to go to the temple for the first time. She's like 23 years old. I'm thinking, well, they won't let her go through until she's 25, so I'm good for another 2 years. Well, they let her go. So then I had to reveal it. And at that point, it was by force, in a sense. So that's it.
Yeah, and I think we're going to find that, and we'll talk about it more, that I think for a lot of parents it is, oh, my child's getting married, they're going on a mission, I'm going to need to go. There's these life markers piece of it. So, yeah, that's wonderful. So thank you so much, Gail. And everybody, feel free to jump in. Was there any questions anybody had for Gail?
Well, I just wanted to comment that Gail and I have something in common in that I had 7 children because I thought that's what the Lord wanted me to do. And I think I'm about 10 years older than the rest of you. And when I was a young married person and just starting a family, you know, I can remember them saying in conference about no birth control and have as many children as you can. And it wasn't until after I had had all my children and they were fairly well grown that I realized that it was torture for me. And it was just too hard. We didn't have enough money. There were too many single socks, etc., for me to enjoy life. So I could really relate to what you said about that, Gail.
Yep, that is how it was. There was no money. Poverty was how we lived.
Well, thanks, Gail. Really, boy, quite the story. So thank you very, very much for sharing. Listeners, at the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned we're going to have 4 people, and we had a 4th panelist, Kevin, and during the recording of this earlier part, something came up, and he just had to drop off the call. So we all made the group decision to keep going with just the 3 panelists that we've been talking with so far, and we'll figure out a way to get Kevin to join in through the online conversation or in some other way. So thanks, Kevin, for being willing to be with us. All right, Carrie, let's go back to you now. For listeners, again, our first round was to sort of people's own spiritual journeys, kind of getting them up to the point where they are now or to the point where they felt like they needed to say something and do something with their children. So, Carrie, you seem to be at the point where I think you left us off with things have come to a head. You're really feeling more intense discomfort within the church. You were able to share with 3 of your 7 children who were the less believing and less active or engaged Mormon children a little bit, but that's basically where you left us off. And do you want to either pick up right there or what would you like to say now about your feelings that are leading to this head of I can't let the status quo go any longer.
Well, you know, I'm really going to bare my soul here. I am just way too fearful to tell my true believing children. And for that, that's one of the reasons I decided not to. You know, you hear stories of how people send out letters or they have a great family meeting like Gail was going to have and disclose your feelings about the church. But I knew that wouldn't work in my family because not only are they on different spots on the continuum of belief, they are pretty outspoken kids, and I knew it could turn into mayhem. So I decided not to do a group disclosure. The tack that I've decided to take is more of a gradual one. And as things come up in conversations about the gospel, I will just give my opinion in a tactful way or ask them some kind of Socratic question. And I think that the three children are astute enough to know that I'm having some serious doubts. But being the people pleaser that I am, I have not yet just come right out and said to those three children, I no longer believe in the truth claims of the church. One of the, you know, I raised those kids to believe in absolute truth, to, you know, I was just the pillar of Mormonism to those children. And I'm having a hard enough time deciding where I am with the church, much less telling them where I am. And so, you know, I'm just not stable enough with my relationship with the church to be disclosing anything to them at this point. And I just don't feel comfortable in doing a big, honest disclosure. And maybe it's just because I'm a chicken.
There is that point in everybody's, you know, faith transition where at first there's a lot of, I know, no longer. Yes, no, that one went away too. But then there is that point a lot of times where you get to where you are putting it back together in a more way that you can say things affirmatively. And so Is it possible that that's just where you're at right now? So and until you can kind of say where you're at, you know, in an affirmative way to make them know that no need for anybody to jump off a cliff here. I've weathered a pretty big storm these last few years, and I'm getting some clarity. I'm getting some sense of myself here. So I'm happy and good. Is that makes good sense to me to wait and to share with that, as long as you feel like those true believing kids are, they're not in a harmful situation, or do you have, is that where you're worried? You kind of started to say that you raised them to believe so black and white. Is there a desire on your part to shake them a little loose from that?
Well, I think they are intelligent enough people that, you know, if they want to find and search the truth like I did, I mean, it's out there. It's on the internet. They know what books to read and everything. I don't want to tell them something they don't want to hear.
Okay. So you're just in a situation of, here's a mother that they're thinking one thing about, but it's not that accurate right now.
Yeah. I mean, the church was such a huge part of my identity, and it was such a huge part of how they identified me, that I'm having a hard time, you know, what would my relationship with them be like? I'm just sure that we would not be as close. We wouldn't have that in common. And our family isn't as close since the three children left the church. I mean, that really breaks the family somewhat apart. And if they knew that I, you know, my husband is still a true believing member, and it kind of, although he has said that he loves me more than he loves the church, so that's comforting. But yeah, how's that? So
I have a question, Carrie. Yeah. I'm kind of confused. When you said three children left the church, and then you said that you hadn't felt comfortable in talking to those three children that were believing. So, but there's seven kids. I mixed up on the numbers of what you're talking about.
You mean 3 and 3 equals 6?
Yeah.
I have one son that is kind of lukewarm. And I shared with him how I felt like maybe a year ago, and it went okay. And maybe I'm underestimating my true believing children. I mean, you know, maybe they will accept it better than I think they will. You think they will?
Yeah.
My one son keeps asking me if I'm saying my prayers, if I'm reading my scriptures. And I say things, no, remember, I'm an agnostic. So I think he's still hanging on to the hope that I'm not damaging his eternal family. It's so huge.
So which child is that one?
Oh, the one that keeps asking me? He's my fourth son and my sixth child.
But is he the one? Is it the lukewarm one that you mentioned?
Oh no, he's not the lukewarm one. The lukewarm one is just lukewarm on everything. He's
okay. So this son is one of the true believing ones, or this son is?
Yeah.
Oh, but you've told him at least that you're an agnostic.
Yes, I told him I was an agnostic, and you know what the result was? He started confessing all his sins to me, sins that I didn't want to hear. So of course, after I confessed that to him, he, you know, the focus of the conversation went to him and not on to me. So, but he remembers the conversation, obviously, and he knows that I'm struggling.
Okay.
You didn't find that conversation where he took your willingness to share something about yourself and he was willing to share all that stuff about himself. You didn't find that conversation to bring you closer?
Yes, it brought us closer. And his issues that he's had, like, he has have drawn him closer to the church.
Oh, so he was telling you that in order to sort of give you hope that you too would draw closer to the church.
Well, I think what really happened is that I told him something that really cut him to the core. And he was quite young when this happened, and like he was a returned missionary, but I told him something that really hurt him. And so he responded by telling me something that would hurt me. So that's not admirable, but that's what happened.
Oh, I get it. Oh,
difficult.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a reaction that, you know, I know a lot of our listeners will, you know, that's part of the life. That's part of the options of what might happen in these cases. Now, you had mentioned to me in kind of some pre-conversation, Carrie, about, you know, you've basically been all right in the church, and it's been your life, and it wasn't like you've been miserable every minute, you know, there things like that. But then you said that there were some things in your parenting that because you were so stalwart in the church, you kind of wish you could take back, or you kind of have some regrets about some pieces of the church. And so this might be good for our younger parents in the audience to, if you don't mind sharing whatever you're willing to, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, like I said before, because I was a believer in absolute truth and black and white, that's what I taught them. And so in a way, when I'm disclosing to them, they're just responding to me in the way that I taught them. You know, I taught them, and I can remember saying in family home evening, you know what, I would just be devastated if I lost any of you, meaning, you know, them leaving the church. And that was kind of a guilt trip. I regret that.
Right.
So I, you know, and I did use some guilt tactics, the same as they used in church. There were some small things, like I kind of mentioned before. I think it's my opinion that the 3-hour block is not developmentally appropriate for small children. And I wish that I had, you know, cared more about my children's schedules and their sleep and eating patterns rather than to just make them stay for the 3-hour block.
Interesting. No, that's a,
so I just, get you on that one.
Yeah.
But you're just saying you wish that you would have just taken control of how much church they did on Sunday.
Well, you know what, too? And I've heard people say they left the church because it was boring. Well, you make them stay there for 3 hours, and I know they're just bored stiff. Even primary's boring, I think. But another thing is I made them pay their tithing, and my husband and I paid our tithing faithfully until just recently, and Gail and I both said that money was tight during those years, and I didn't even take my kids to the doctor or dentist. But I believe if we hadn't paid our tithing, I could have taken better care of my children physically. Another thing is that my callings took so much time. The day before I was to go to my first class of my graduate program, I was called to an important calling. I was called to be Relief Society president. And it was so ingrained in me that we don't say no that I said yes. So here I was the Relief Society president for 3 years. I was in an intense graduate program, and I still had 7 kids at home. And I think it would have been much easier if I had had the guts to say no and maybe put my children first, because I was going to do the graduate program no matter what.
Wow.
I raised them according to what I thought was real, and I'm too fearful to tell them that what I thought was real, I no longer think is real. And like I said, maybe I'm underestimating them. I know my one true believing daughter, we talked about that Salamander book for a little bit. She says, I started reading it and I just couldn't read it anymore because it was impacting my opinion of the prophet. And whenever I talk to her, she just says, Mom, I just can't hear this. Because she's so much like me, I know that someday she'll end up being right where I am. But she's got a young family and she just can't hear it right now. And maybe that's why it took me 25 years, is because I couldn't hear it right then. So that's kind of where I am now. I don't know if it's fear that I'm not telling them. I don't know if I want to I don't know if I could handle them being disappointed in me.
Yeah. Tough situation. Thank you for sharing so much. I'm curious, it dawned on me here at the end as you're reflecting on the block and you're reflecting on, you know, taking callings and maybe, you know, not having money that you might have gone to doctors and things with. Are those things, rather than the truth claims of the church, are those places that you could start conversations with? You know, the kids, I know you probably don't feel deprived, but this has been weighing on me lately that, you know, I was gone for so much of the time, especially that time when I was Relief Society president, or there were times when I know I subjected you guys to, you know, the 3-hour block was so soul-sucking or whatever for you. And they begin those conversations of perhaps that they might take charge of those things themselves a little bit better?
Well, that's a good idea. Actually, my true believing daughter believes that the 3-hour block is ridiculous also. And those aren't the reasons I left the church. It was more doctrinal reasons. And
well, you haven't really left, have you? Or
oh, no. You know what? I'm still going to church.
Right.
Every Sunday. And I still have a calling. And so, like I said, I'm still confused about what kind of a relationship I want to have with the church. And it changes from week to week. Last Sunday, I had a great experience at church. So, oh, man, it isn't easy.
Join the club, yeah. Good days and bad days, for sure.
Say you've left the church in your mind.
Yes.
It's just that you physically are still going.
Yes.
I stopped for a long time. Okay.
How long did you do it?
Like 9 years.
Yeah. Well, I just am, you know, my husband, I want to go with my husband. And I thought, well, that's a small sacrifice I can make, is just to go to church with him. So, yeah. Another thing, you know what? I never let my kids play on Sundays. It's abusive.
I did the same thing.
We all stayed locked in the house, being bored. So, yeah, I kind of regret those things.
Thank you. Well, you're giving voice to a lot of things that I know are playing around in a lot of minds. So, thank you. And we'll kind of have a free for all at the end of the conversation where we can kind of revisit some of this. But Jeff, we'd love to have you share a little bit, because I know that you've gone ahead and taken the step to talk with your kids. So, kind of bring us up to that point and into what's happened since.
Okay, but help me remember when we do the free-for-all that I have a couple of things that I wanted to say about what Carrie was just talking about and Gail was.
Oh, no, do it now then. I mean, please.
All right, well, I'm actually feeling a little bit emotional. I've wanted to tell my mom's story for a long time. And pretty large pieces of Carrie and Gail, what you were just talking about, I've never... you know, heard it said out loud. And anyways, it's just affecting me. I thought it was a story that needed to be told about those expectations. And so I'm not prepared really to speak for my mom at this point, but I was, I don't know, just struck a chord. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
So my story, by 2008, my wife and I had worked things out between ourselves, right? And she knew that I needed a timeout. She'd come to see the timeout I proposed as pretty mild, like doable, you know, compared to what it could have been. She wanted me to get to a better place. So I think she wanted resolution one way or the other. But so what do we tell the kids? And I had been so in myself that I had not given it much thought. I hadn't talked to anyone because I was fearful of negatively affecting their faith. Some of the things have been expressed already a little bit. And that, especially my children. I mean, like, I didn't talk to my wife for 7 years, right? So barely prepared to thinking about talking to my kids. So at this point, I just want to say a little bit about the way I looked at the world, and some of the things that I had unconsciously been teaching them made the coming out go pretty good, actually. I mentioned before that I spent a lot of time challenging them to get their own testimony and understanding. I didn't spend a lot of time laying down exact formulas or meanings or doctrines, probably because of my own internal journey. I was really loath to tell them anything definitive. I talked a lot about with my kids and the kids at church about their frame of reference. I wouldn't start with like, this is what you got to do. I would ask them, where are they at with their testimony? And if this is where you're at, this is what would follow. But if you're not there, then something else might follow. So this idea that there are other ways to evaluate choices besides 1970s church lens, I think was unconsciously taught to my children. So if abstaining from smoking like was not the pinnacle of church intellectual thought, like what was? We called those the don'ts. And if paying tithing wasn't the pinnacle of thought or the do's, what was? So what I was teaching them was that God was revealing to us ways to free ourselves to serve and love others. That's a good lens. And that was my frame of reference. How are you treating others? It wasn't a master plan, but I was asking him every day, hey, how are you treating people today? You'd have to talk. So at this point, right? So I remember myself as a brilliant father, apparently. you'd have to talk to them to get like their view of what was going on. But I'm sure it wouldn't match. Anyways, it's time to tell them that something in their life was going to change. And that was the big driver. Their expectations for cultural milestones, right? The traditions and glue of our family narrative. My outward behavior, as far as their lives are concerned, was changing very little. But there were some big cultural markers coming up, and I wanted them to be prepared if it didn't go the way that it was expected or the way we had talked about it. You know, like Dad.
So you didn't feel a need to do it just to be self-revelatory. It was more like, somebody's going to get married, somebody's going to get baptized, somebody's going to need to be ordained, and I'm not going to do it or not be there.
Exactly. And not just somebody, like there's only four of us, right? Two kids. So that's exactly right, what you said. my fear was, you know, like, hey, Dad, you haven't missed a scout outing in 30 years. Sometimes I'd go when it was raining just to show people nothing could stop me. And you're going to miss my temple marriage, right? That's a nightmare for me. A commitment to everybody except for our family narrative. So when I, me and my wife sat down with them and we had that big family council. My daughter was in her second year of college and my son was in his second year of high school. And I didn't have any interest in talking about the details of my journey like we just talked about. So I didn't really have like a big pile of stuff or grievances to get off my chest. I like the way Carrie said it. I just come out to myself that I was going to start figuring out. I knew what I didn't know. I was just starting to figure out what I was going to know. So I didn't want to talk about the details, but I was right or wrong. I was worried about the rites of passage. My daughter just started dating a great and loving young man. He wasn't a member of the church, but she had that look in her eye. And so yeah. She needed to know that I might not be in the temple on her wedding day. That's how I felt. So the coming out thing was a kind of anticlimactic. I was successful even without a plan. Their testimony seemed to be their own and not necessarily tied to mine. Their place in our family was not measured by their testimony. So awesome. I told them that I was struggling with my testimony. I didn't know what I used to know. While I was working on it, I was taking a time out from the big things as dictated by my conscience, and that I might miss some stuff because of that. They wanted some examples, and the Prop 8 thing was all over the place, and so that was I was willing to talk about that with them, how difficult it was to not feel that that was the right thing for me to do. So conscience versus directions from the church. But, you know, after I said that, there wasn't too much other talk. I actually talked to my daughter a little bit about this. I would have talked to my son. He's on his mission right now, and we didn't have time to exchange letters. But she said that she was very sad, and I picked that up. But she wasn't mad. She was proud of me for trying to follow what I've been preaching and let integrity be my guide and not keeping up appearances. My son's reaction was probably the most difficult. So he's, you know, 14 or 15 here. He's never been very a verbal person, and he's super easygoing, just kind of goes along with whatever. So he was crying, and we didn't have like a time limit on the discussion. So he asked, his only question was, are me and mom getting a divorce? And that shocked me.
You mean like immediately on this first meeting where you guys came out?
You know, I couldn't tell. That probably would have been a good like follow-up question, like tell me more of what you're thinking, but it kind of blew my mind. I've been on this long journey for a long time and mostly internal. And this was like his first minutes with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
My wife and already struggled. My wife and I have been struggling with that. So, you know, that he would felt bad about that. That he would worry, but it's appropriate for him to worry about it. And so I tried to be as honest as I could. You know, I didn't think we were going to get divorced. Certainly wasn't imminent. We were doing good. We've been talking a lot. There was no guarantees for, you know, regardless of how I was doing in the church. And that was kind of the end of the meeting. And there hasn't been much else since. They're not really checking up on me. I was checking up on them. Hey, you got any questions? Hey, what about that crazy thing I laid on you? Okay, Dad. Yeah, you said you were working on it. So, you know, go work on it, Dad, I guess. they were not as interested as I was. It had been consuming me for years. And so I was pleasantly surprised at how, I don't know. I just thought something else. I don't know. So it was kind of over. It probably helped that not a lot of things changed. I was as active as I ever was. My timeout lasted only for a couple of years before I found some constructs that worked for me to add back in the big things. So I guess in conclusion, my kids seem prepared to have the relationship to the church be separate from mine. They seem to be prepared to know at the end of the day that we ask each other how we treated each other and other people, and not if we had a smoke or where we stood on peepstone issues. Not that those aren't important, but they weren't essential to what it meant for us to be a Mormon family. So maybe if I had missed some bigger cultural markers, you know, if I had missed my daughter's temple ceremony, you know, maybe things would have gone worse, or they might even have gone better. It would have been more strengthening. I believe this ended up being a strengthening moment for us. And so I don't really have a strong conviction on whether it would have been better or worse if we would have missed some of those cultural markers, as I've been calling them. I would, if time for one more little story.
Please.
Okay. So I just mentioned that my son was on his mission. So I kind of had a little out-of-body experience. I got what I'm calling that letter from him, from a new missionary son. I just never figured I would be the person to get that letter. So, you know, when a missionary goes out and he's got members of his family that need help, he'll testify in an immature way or mature way, they'll call him to repentance. And I got that letter from my son. I just thought I would never be that person. So it was very, very sweet. He gently tried to suggest that, you know, maybe I'm not meant to figure everything out, and maybe a little more faith. And then he apologized for trying to advise me, but I just thought it was interesting that he would be, you know, after the years of not checking up on me, you know, he's worried about me on his mission. And so I just thought that was culturally interesting anyways. And but it made me feel good. I felt like he treated somebody well that day, right? And it happened to be his old.
Nice. Really, lots of rich stuff in there. Thank you so much, Jeff. There was one little moment here where maybe others are confused too. You said, maybe if I had missed some cultural markers like my daughter's temple. Does that mean that in this, when you've started, after your break was over for 2 years or so, you were able to get a temple recommend and you did attend a temple marriage?
Yes. By the time the biggies came around, I had my temple recommend and I was comfortable doing most of the priesthood ordinances. And so,
okay. And so, and that wasn't like a driver, because I think there might be a percentage of our audience. It's like, okay, I think because I know that this is coming up within a year, I'm just going to grin. You naturally found those other constructs that made you feel like I'm going to end my time out. Or was it partly because you knew that she was liking this guy, had that look, like you said?
No. I would like to think that it took its own time. But I think if I'm being honest, that I was motivated to reach some conclusions. If I was going to miss her temple sealing, then I needed to know something more about myself than I knew when I started. I needed to reach some conclusions. So I would say that that was a driving factor. It wasn't a driving factor to get there. It was a driving factor to have a better reason to not go than, I don't know.
That's Got it.
Yeah. Jeff, what do you think now? I don't know. And I wanted to have something stronger than that for missing such an important day to our family.
And terrific. Thank you. So your break is over. You're now a temple recommend holder. And so what do your kids think now? Do they still see Dad as not, you know, prior to the meeting where you kind of broke the news to them at all that you were going to take this break and find yourself, do they think that you've found yourself and now you're right back where you were? Or are they still seeing that, you know, here you are, you're able to do all the cultural markers, you're able to perform the ordinances and be part of things, but are you still now open to them in a different way than you were before? Or are they just thinking his crisis is over and now he's back to the same old Dad?
You know, I don't know what they think. That's a really good question. So I'll just give my impression of what we're... So I think that letter from my son is an indication that he doesn't think that I'm back to good old Dad, no problem.
Okay.
I have expressed to both of them how I constructed getting back to what looks like mostly normal activity. I wasn't going to necessarily go into that. I didn't think that was part of our thing tonight to finish my where my faith journey is, but I've shared it with them. And so I would say that they know that I'm not back where I was, that I'm in full activity in the church from a very, very different place than I was before.
Great. Carrie or Gail, any questions for Jeff? Appreciate you sharing that, Jeff. That was wonderful.
Sure.
Well, I have a comment. I appreciated Jeff saying that his children's testimony didn't seem to be linked to his. And as he was saying that, it reminded me that my testimony was actually linked to my children's testimony. I cannot say that it didn't negatively impact my testimony when my children left the church. My two daughters left when they were teenagers, and I can remember thinking at one point, if I weren't a Mormon, I would think these girls were normal.
Mm.
My other child that left the church was a return missionary, a very intelligent boy. He was at Harvard when he left the church. And when he left, it was kind of one of the straws that broke the camel's back, because I respected him so much that when he left, I just thought, wow, there must really be something wrong with the church for him to leave. Because he left, he was in his late 20s when he left, and he gave it the college try. Really, he did. And so I don't know if my children's testimony will be linked to mine, but I do know that mine was linked to theirs.
Interesting.
That was really an insightful comment. Wow. Yeah, boy, that's something. When you say your children have left, they have their names removed, or is it just more like they've slipped into inactivity? It just hasn't come up to for them to fully on act decisively.
The two girls have not had their names removed. I don't know about my son. He doesn't talk about it much. And I'm sure if he had his name removed, he probably wouldn't share that with me.
Okay. Thank you. Gail, anything for Jeff, or it's time just to move into your story, if you'd like, either one.
Okay, I wanted to comment on Carrie, and that Carrie mentioned accepting a heavy calling while she was doing other heavy things. And I remember accepting to be a Relief Society president in a branch that was Spanish, English speaking, both. So everything had to be delivered in both languages. And I had five children, and I was pregnant with my sixth, and I was huge. This child was 10'3" when he was born.
Oh, man.
And it was no small deal, you know. I mean, and it was work, and it was hard. Plus, we were on assistance from the church, and so was my counselor, my first counselor, too. I mean, we were living in, like, the projects in Camden, New Jersey. So everybody was poor. It wasn't, like, just me. But anyway, that just reminded, when she said that, it reminded me of what I was going through at that time, and that I did it not thinking much about it. But anyway, I got upset and swore at one of the people, and eventually I got released. Guess that was the easy way to do that. And then when Jeff, when you mentioned getting letters from your missionary, I have two missionaries out right now, and I've had three out at a time up until October. And I don't receive those as well as you did. In reading their letters every week, I read them when I get them, and then I read them at family meeting when we get together as a family and we read all the letters that have come in. It's like, it's an ongoing testifying to things that they know and they know and they know. And I just have no concept of that at all. Like, that's not real to me. And a lot of it's, you know, calling repentance and do that. And it's not, I take it kind of offensively. I don't know if the word is offensively, but it just gets really old week after week after week after week. And I just get tired of it, I guess.
I could see that. That would, right. I got, I got one quick sweet one, right? If we're here a year from now, I'll call you up for some for some love and understanding.
Do you guys know the story about President Kimball with his son who was wayward, and you know, he just wrote him and wrote him and wrote him. I mean, his son became I believe a dean of a law school, and you know, he says, I'm an adult, I've made these decisions and things like that. And his dad, just entire life, is writing these letters, and his son finally said, you know, Dad, I'm not going to be able to have a relationship with you at all if you just don't quit testifying to me and all this stuff. And it was like Camilla Kimball, President Kimball's wife, just had to say to Spencer W. Kimball too, this isn't working. So just know that it's sometimes it's slow for people to get the message, but you have to believe that it's not just fear, but it's love, you know, that's motivated.
Well, it's not only that, it's they're instructed to do that. I know, because I was a missionary. You're instructed to testify, and I testified in every letter to my parents, who aren't even Mormon and don't believe in anything. I'm like, oh my gosh, I look back on that, and so I just kind of, it's irritating, but I don't say anything to them. I just keep reading it. My one son, who's an atheist, does tell him, look, I'm not reading your letters because they're too churchy. You know, if you want to tell me what you're doing and how much fun you saw or whatever, that's fine, but I'm not going to read all this stuff. So he just refuses to read it. But I am the mother, and I do write the letters to him. And so it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I can just write them off. I don't think so. Anyway.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.